Good morning, everyone. I'd like to call this meeting of the Education Finance Division to order. We do have a quorum, so who am I going to pick on today? Representative Richardson, you've got, have you had time with the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I move that we approve the minutes.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All those, any discussion to the Richardson motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much. This morning we are starting off with a presentation from the State Demographer's Office, looking at the changing population of our state and specifically our schools, moving then to a discussion of English language learners and needs and services in the schools, and then we'll have Representative Herz, House File 448, up after that base is laid for the committee's understanding. With that, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Lori Barkopensky. I'm the Director of Community Services at the Department of Administration. And you probably know administration because we take care of your buildings, we renovate your capital, we do a lot of things. But we also have the honor of having the State Demographic Center within our area. We appreciate the invitation to come today. Dr. Brower was not able to come because she is scheduled to be in Marshall training local officials on Census 2020 activities. So I have the pleasure of introducing Megan Dayton, who is one of our senior researchers, and this is her first time testifying, so I am her buddy.
All right. Ms. Dayton, welcome to the committee. Welcome to your first time testifying. Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, my name is Megan Elizabeth Dayton. I'm a senior demographer at Minnesota's State Demographic Center in the Department of Administration. I've been asked here today to speak to our state's foreign-born population and various aspects of English language proficiency. One's birthplace gives clues to the story that follows. Minnesota's born individuals have many shared experiences with each other, having been shaped by Minnesota institutions and communities. Those born in other states may have come to Minnesota to reunite with family, for higher education, or for job prospects. Immigrant populations bring traditions and languages from across the world into their neighborhoods and workplaces, and may also bring insights and connections to local and global markets. Children of immigrants navigate multiple cultures, which can be an economic asset. In 1919, Minnesota's legislature established the State Board of Education, and so it's relevant to take a historical perspective of our demographic makeup. In 1920, Minnesota had 490,000 foreign-born residents. This is similar to the most recent data point where we estimate 450 foreign-born residents in 2017. Though these numbers are similar, in 1920, this number represents 25% of the total population, while in 2017, that's just 8%. Foreign-born residents in 1920 looked much different than they do today. Sweden, Norway, and Germany provided the Scandinavian ski jump that we see in the early part of the 20th century. These countries are still counted among the state's top contributors, but Mexico, Somalia, and India now lead the way, in addition to smaller counts of immigrants coming from Southeast Asia and West Africa. After two decades of rapid immigration, Mexican-born residents have begun declining in number between 2010 and 2017. Nationally, the number of U.S. residents, legal and undocumented, born in Mexico has dropped slowly in the past decade, but the decline has really started to accelerate in the last couple of years. Border states like California and Texas have experienced the largest drop in their Mexican immigrant populations. In the last 7 years, Minnesota has lost 5,500 Mexican-born residents. Mexican immigrants remain by far the largest immigrant group in Minnesota at 65,751, with immigrants from Somalia and India a distant second, around 30,000 each.
Ms. Dayton?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
A brief question on the graph. Did you refer to that as the Scandinavian ski jump? Did I hear that right?
Yes, that's correct, Mr. Chair.
I love that. Thank you. Well, I've representing part of Minneapolis, I've often observed that the stores along Lake Street that, probably in the late 1800s, early 1900s, that would have had signs up in Swedish and Norwegian and Danish now have them up in Spanish and Somali and other languages, and that the Ingebrigtsen's classic Scandinavian store on Lake Street that sells Lesser griddles now gets frequented by East African immigrants who use the Lesser griddles for injera. So it's all this just cycling over and people being creative. But thank you. The Scandinavian ski jump. I love that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we'll get right into the number of Minnesotans that speak English less than very well, which is 236,400 at most recent estimate. So this classification comes from the U.S. Census Bureau's American Community Survey. The Bureau asks three questions to gather data on those speaking a language other than English at home: what that language is and how well each person speaks English. Question one asks, does this person speak a language other than English at home? Response choices are either yes or no. The second question asks, what is this language? For example, Korean, Italian, Spanish, Vietnamese. Responses here are written in. And the final question asks, how well does this person speak English? Response choices are very well, well, not well, or not at all. One of the main purposes of collecting information on languages is for voting rights determination. Information about languages spoken at home and English speaking ability helps determine bilingual election requirements under the Voting Rights Act. The Census Bureau creates voting rights determination file after every census. Limited English speaking households are also identified by the Census Bureau. A limited English speaking household is one in which no member 14 years and over speaks only English or speaks a non-English language and speaks English very well. In other words, all members 14 years and over have at least some difficulty with English. By definition, English-only households cannot belong to this group, and previous Census Bureau data products referred to these households as linguistically isolated and households where no one age 14 and over speaks English only or speaks English very well. 78%, or 185,000 of these Minnesotans with language barriers, live in the seven-county metro region. Nobles County, in the southwest corner of the state, has the highest concentration of residents with language barriers. Nearly one in five residents there speaks English less than very well. Among Minnesota's largest cultural groups, there exists sizable shares of the population with language barriers. 28,000 residents identifying with an Asian cultural group have a language barrier. 10,000 residents identifying with a Black or African American cultural group have a language barrier. And 30,000 residents identifying with a Hispanic cultural group have a language barrier. The majority of Minnesotans who speak a language other than English at home are of working age, 18 to 64. Likelihood of English proficiency decreases with age within these broad age groups. 25% of children who speak another language have limited English proficiency. These children will need additional assistance to succeed in school. That share nearly doubles for the working age population. Adults with limited English proficiency have restricted prospects for employment and advancement. Then, language barriers encumber more than half of our state's retirees who speak another language.
Ms. Dayton, can I, if I may, again, sorry. Looking at this English proficiency among Minnesotans who speak a language other than English, are the, when we look at the immigrant groups, is the population profile different for different language groups? You identified Mexican immigrants or Spanish speaking versus some of the Asian immigrant groups. Are the particularly the age profiles of those different immigrant groups similar, different, and is that a contributing factor to language?
Mr. Chair, we see a lot of similarities with groups who speak a language other than English, but we also see a lot of differences in terms of labor force participation, educational attainment, and even basic things like the age structure of people who speak languages other than English. And then we break those into how well they speak English in addition to their native tongue.
Okay. Thank you.
Among the children in this group, Asian and Pacific Island languages outnumber any others. Our retirees with language barriers are more concentrated in their mother tongue than our children, but the number of Asian and Pacific Island language speaking adults are nearly equal, which is surprising. Nearly 70,000 working age Minnesotans with limited English proficiency are Spanish speaking. Minnesotans who speak a language other than English at home, in addition to their English proficiency, have a valuable asset that can potentially open up employment options by offering culturally informed services to the community of their native language. However, other data points help shed light on populations who may have better employment outcomes if given opportunities to improve their English proficiency. 25% of Minnesotans who speak a language other than English do not hold a high school diploma, compared to just 5% of residents who speak only English. Consequently, these Minnesotans have narrow employment prospects and limited earnings potential. Adults without a high school education are at a much greater risk of unemployment, poverty, and the need for public assistance. A large concentration of Minnesota's residents with limited English language proficiency are situated at both the bottom and the top of educational attainment. Among residents who speak another language, those that hold a bachelor's degree or higher make up the largest share at 32%. Minnesotans participating in the labor force are the engine of our economy. Currently, around 1 in 10 participants of our labor force speak a language other than English. That's around 278,000 out of 2.2 million.
Mr. Staten?
Yes,
if I may, Representative Pryor, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to go back to when you're talking about educational attainment in the high school, so I can understand this better, if someone has been an immigrant or a refugee and had education in their country of origin, is that accounted for? Are we talking about, what's transferring to the U.S.?
Ms. Bain.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's a self-selected answer on the form. It could be translated by the individual from their home country if they feel that the degree is equivalent. But again, there's no credentials to determine the educational attainment. It's just self-reported.
Thank you, Ms. Dayton.
So there are various reasons for not participating in the labor force, including attending school or college full-time, a disability or mental health concern that prevents one from working either permanently or while receiving treatment, a role as a full-time caregiver for children or family members, or the high costs associated with child care that can negate wages earned. Others outside the labor force include former workers who have become discouraged about their job search and so have stopped working, those who have retired early, or those with another earner in the household who do not have an economic need to participate.
Ms. Dayton, I should have asked this earlier. Would you like us to continue to interrupt you as we have been? Or wait until you're done and then go back and ask questions? What's your preference?
Mr. Chair, questions while I'm speaking are just fine. I'm just about done, so either way works for me.
Okay. Representative Katiza Watoon, you had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I just wanted to clarify. So these labor force data, based on this American Community Survey, this is their primary language spoken at home, not people who have English and a second language. Just the way that it's written, speak a language other than English. It's their primary language, correct?
Ms. Dayton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's their language spoken at home.
Okay.
It doesn't qualify their primary language spoken at home. It just signifies that they do speak a language other than English at home. There are further details for how well they speak English in addition to their mother tongue or their language spoken at home. But, yeah, thank you.
All right. Representative Sandel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is it possible, since these the information here comes from the U.S. Census Bureau, is it possible that there is a group of individuals not represented in this information who don't participate because their language is not English, or they choose not to participate in a national survey like this?
Ms. Dayton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a large concern of self-reported data, in that some people become fearful of reporting their information on a federal form, even though they're legally obligated to do so. So, yes, that's a large concern.
Representative Sandel.
Mr. Chair, so it is possible that some of the situation of individuals who are outside the labor force or not being able to work or who have less educational attainment aren't represented here, and those numbers might be higher.
Ms. Dayton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, those numbers could be higher or lower. We have what's included in this estimate, a margin of error, which gives us a 95% confidence in the number within the range that data point exists in. So this is roughly an estimate of those numbers. But outside of that error margin, there are people who are not being reported.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dayton. Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Looking at this chart, I, this is education finance. We're talking about English learners in our in K through 12, but in the workforce, with 6 in 10 Minnesotans in the labor force speak a language other than English, what resources do adults have? Is it through community ed? What other programs are available for adults who are themselves English learners?
Ms. Dayton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm aware of numerous initiatives to improve English language proficiency for those with an English language difficulty. I'm not entirely sure what exactly those are, but I can follow up and find some resources for you if you'd like.
Okay, thank you.
And Representative Juergens may be someone familiar with adult basic education services in the state would be helpful. Ms. Dayton, come on.
There we go.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you. So back to the 6 in 10 Minnesotans not participating in the labor force speak a language other than English at home. This amounts to 70,000 residents who speak only English and 103,000 residents who speak a language other than English at home. So these disparate outcomes are influenced by a multitude of factors, including varying levels of opportunity and access to education, structural racism, institutions and systems that have privileged some groups over others through generations and up to the present. These important social and historical contexts are difficult to adequately capture, but I hope this data is useful to the committee in its efforts to improve the lives of all Minnesotans. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm happy to take any questions that remain.
Thank you, Ms. Dayton. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your presentation. How does Minnesota compare to neighboring states, the demographics, for example, Wisconsin? Do you have any knowledge of that?
Ms. Dayton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have exact numbers on our neighboring states in terms of foreign-born populations or limited English proficiency in our individuals here in Minnesota, but I do know that Minnesota is a long-standing hub for international immigration in Minnesota. That's kept our population growth positive over the last decade and beyond. So I would assume that the numbers here would be a bit higher than our neighboring states, but I can follow up with you if you'd like.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious about Wisconsin. I don't think North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa are probably states that we compare more to, but Wisconsin we do. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dayton. Representative Kunish, I'm just not doing it today. Kunish Podine, my apologies.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're talking about foreign language and folks coming in with languages other than English, and then how that might affect our labor force participation. Can you talk about any other barriers other than language for folks that want to enter the labor force, or is this not the conversation that we would have? And I'm thinking about like immigration. My children's father came from Lebanon, and he spoke Arabic and French and English, but he struggled to find, you know, meaningful employment because of his green card status. And I'm just wondering if some of those issues might be a reason for some of these labor force issues or the amount of folks that are active in the labor force and participating.
Ms. Dayton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we see that language proficiency in a language other than English can be a benefit for labor force participation. It can also be a hindrance. We see, as I mentioned, reasons for not participating in the labor force can include attending school, coming from another country to attend school here full-time, a disability or mental health concern. Other things become like a caregiver role for children. Some of these things seem to disproportionately affect our communities of lower income. So if they're already not participating in the labor force, it becomes a further hindrance to them beginning to participate in the labor force.
Thank you.
Representative Sandel, you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was interested in Representative Juergens' question about agencies and organizations where adults particularly could get English instruction. I worked on the west side of St. Paul for a while, and Neighborhood House was such an important neighborhood and community resource for 100 years. And I know in Minneapolis, Northeast Neighborhood House was also had a similar role in teaching English. A couple questions. One is, what's the most effective agency, organizations, or effort in English language instruction for adults? And do state funds to go to any of those organizations?
Ms. Dayton, is that the demographer's office?
Mr. Chair and Representative, those are not data that I have ever seen before, but perhaps they might come from the Department of Education if they're housing some sort of metrics on the community education or the effectiveness of particular programs that they have implemented.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank
All right. Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifiers, this might not fit into your area of expertise, but do you find a lot of immigrants coming in not only not have the English skills, but no formal education at all?
Ms. Vaden, do you have any information on what we would refer to, I believe, Representative Detmer, as SLIFE students with limited or interrupted formal education? I think I got that acronym right.
Mr. Chair, yes, because many times they come from areas of the world where there is no formal education, and then to come into America not only not having English skills, but even any knowledge about America.
Ms. Dayton?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's certainly the case for some of the immigrants that come to our country, absolutely. Again, these numbers are self-reported data, so we have the various levels of educational attainment included in these data sets. Sometimes they're broken into less than a ninth grade education or even lower than primary school for the purposes of this data set and in order to increase the sample size for reliability of trending within the data set. I limited this to without a high school diploma or with a bachelor's degree, and then the various levels in between, including having a high school diploma and then an associate's degree or some college. But there are data points that exist for the state of Minnesota overall for further limiting less than a high school education.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Detmer, or excuse me, that was you, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just with the question of what a good program might be for adults and English language and so on, I'd like to highlight our adult basic education program in Minnesota. I've visited our local one in Albert Lea a number of times, and it's an amazing program. And not only do they work with these people, and they're all ages and different languages, they also have connections to mentor these people into their next step, whether it's going on to higher education, whether it's getting into the job market. So I was very, very impressed with it. Just want to add that.
Thank you very much. Representative Erickson, you have another question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just thought Mr. Strom could shed some light on our investment that we've made in ABE and other programs that assist these folks.
Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, for the adult basic education program, the state provides about $50 million a year in aid for that program currently.
Thank you. Any other questions? Ms. Dayton, thank you very much for your presentation. Thank you both for taking the time to be here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like at this point to invite Kirsten Nicholson and Todd Sesker to come forward to speak to the school district experience and Mr. Kroonquist, excuse me, the school district experience of English language learners in the classroom. Good morning and welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding a hearing on this very important issue. And we also want to thank Representative Herr for her bringing the bill forward. We strongly support it. Increased funding for English learner programming is on our platform as one of our top priorities. And many of you are familiar with the term special education cross-subsidy. You may be less aware that we have a significant cross-subsidy actually in our English learner program. In fact, statewide, it is approaching $100 million now for our school districts. In other words, they are needing to spend almost $100 million more on EL programs than the revenue that is brought in through the EL funding stream. And so we are hoping this session that we can begin to whittle that down because clearly our English learners need the resources and opportunities that those funds could provide in order to make sure that they have an opportunity to meet state and federal standards and reach their full potential. So thank you for just the chance to offer that brief overview, Mr. Chairman and members, and now I'm going to let some of the experts actually speak more specifically about the need in the program.
Thank you, Mr. Kronquist. Ms. Nicholson? Is it?
I think I'm going to actually go next, if that's okay.
Oh, that's just fine, Superintendent. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representatives. My name is Todd Susker. I'm the superintendent at Faribault Public Schools. And I finally got a little bit of sleep after last night. We ended up with 8 inches of snow in less than 2 hours, right at 3 o'clock. And we had kids in our gym, and it was kind of a mess. But we made it through, and it went very well at the end. I'm here to talk a little bit about our EL situation in Faribault. Back in 2000, we had maybe 10% of our population were students of color, and very few of those students were EL students. Now, in 2019, we have over 55% of our students are students of color, and 25% of those students are now English language learners. Many of those students are SLIFE students, as Mr. Chair, you pointed out very well, is that these are students who come to Faribault not only not understanding or knowing English, but also not having any sort of education or any sort of formal education. A lot of these kids come from refugee camps. They have been in situations that you and I would not even ever think about or dream about. They have come over here, and prior to 2013, we did not have enough funding to support a real structured program. We put maybe a 12 or 13-year-old in an age-appropriate classroom, whether it was an 8th grade or a 9th grade classroom, that had not any sort of formal education. So it's not an appropriate setting, but I was never, ever going to put a 13 or a 14-year-old kid in a kindergarten classroom. That doesn't make any sense. So in 2013, we did pass an operating levy in Faribault, our great community, which I know Representative Daniels is a part of. We passed an operating levy that supported a director of English language learners. At that time, we hired Sam Oak. If you haven't heard of Sam, he's an outstanding individual. He's very well known in the state and has done quite a great job for us. We did create a curriculum. In a nutshell, what we did is we created a K-12 curriculum, and if students came over, if they were 14 or 15 years old, we told them right away that it's going to be probably 6 years before you graduate. If you look at our graduation rates, they're not great because we do have an EL population that's quite high. But after 6 years, if you look at our graduation rate, they're pretty good. So in that program, students basically, and this is I'm really simplifying it, they have an iPad or an electronic device that starts with a kindergarten curriculum. And those kids are at an age-appropriate level in a classroom called a newcomer classroom at an age-appropriate level, go through the curriculum starting at kindergarten, and at the same time are learning English all the way through their graduation. We've seen tremendous success with this program. It has turned around, and it's changed a lot of our kids' lives. Talking about the cross-subsidy, as Mr. Kronquist talked about, right now Faribault is spending $2.1 million to offer these great programs for kids that are making them really responsible citizens. They've been graduating at a nice rate for us, but we are only taking in $704,000 in revenue for the student ADM and also any of our EL funding. That's a cross-subsidy for us of about $1.4 million, and In addition, we also are challenged with a special education cross-subsidy of about $3.2 million. So when you look at comparisons of districts throughout the state, it's not an apples and apples comparison. You can't do that. We have a challenging population where we offer some great EL services, and we want to serve these kids, and we want to make sure that this investment that you guys are making to us is paying off in the long run so these kids are being responsible citizens. I did hand out a form under Faribault Public Schools for you to take a look at. It really does a good job of summarizing where we have come over the last 5 or 6 years. We have been seeing students making accelerated progress in our program. Like I said, the curriculum is outstanding. I think it's a state model. We've encouraged schools. We've seen schools come down to see what we've done. If we do have students that don't make it after age 20 or 21, we transition very well into our adult basic education program. I don't remember what the curriculum is called, but we do offer a great curriculum for that program, and we are working with local businesses and other educational institutions to get those kids or those adults now out into the workforce. So even though we have the great success, we know this program model and the comprehensive service it provides will not be sustainable unless there is an increase in EL funding. Unfortunately, our district will struggle to continue to put over $1 million in cross-subsidies spending towards EL. The only way to sustain the success that we've seen is to increase the per capita dollar amount in English learners. We hope that you guys will consider this and help us out. And I know it's going to benefit all school districts and the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Pryor, you have
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to put out another topic, too, in addition to the cross-subsidy part, to ask you, because you're here today and can speak to it. I know in one of my high schools, Eden Prairie High School, they know that when you have English language learners, they can have up to 7 years to graduate. And that really affects the data that shows four-year graduations. So it makes it look like they're 2 or 3% behind other schools that don't have the same number of English language learners and don't have the same percentage of people that are graduating in 4 years. It gets complicated, the 4 years and 7 years. And is that also something that you would think reflects in Faribault, too, that you actually are graduating kids on time? It's just that they need more time to graduate because they're still learning the language and still need those extra years for it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is true. We did some analysis with our Big Nine conference, great conference down in the southeast area of Minnesota with Rochester, Mankato. I put a plug in for the Big Nine. Faribault ranks number one in EL and free and reduced lunch, which is another issue that we have with students. There's a direct correlation on the success of kids and kids who are on free and reduced lunch. We rank number one in that category. We also rank last in graduation rates. There is a direct correlation to that. Again, if you look at our 6 and 7 year graduation rates, by that time we finally catch up. But we're measured in the cylinder silo of all other schools, which again is not an apples to apples comparison. Causes havoc with our realtors, and you do the best you can to explain that situation. And we do. We have some kids that graduate before that, and we really work hard to try to get them within that 4 years. But if you have an EL student that comes over here at 16, 17 years old, I'll tell you right now, they will not graduate in 2 years.
Representative Pryor?
Thank you.
All right. Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And class of 69, Faribault Falcons. And grew up on a dairy farm. Between Near Strand and Cannon City, one-room schoolhouse right across from our dairy farm my first 6 years, and then we were bused into town. Outdoor biffies back in those days. But do you have increase in enrollment or decline in enrollment?
Right now we have decline.
Superintendent.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, representatives, right now we are declining enrollment. We haven't had growth in Faribault for probably about 15 years, and as a result, the population of students have declined. So we're probably losing about 60 kids per year.
Okay. Representative Detmer?
Mr. Chair, I have a follow-up. When the EL population comes in to your school, what organization? Is it a federal organization that brings them into the community, and is there funding that follows them?
Excuse me, Superintendent Sesker.
Mr. Chair, Representatives, the funding that we get for schools would be the, are you talking about the state aid and the EL funding?
Representative Detmer?
Mr. Chair, my question was, is the federal government bringing this population into your community, into your school, and is this, does funding come with it, or is it just the funding from the state?
Superintendent Sesker.
Yeah, it's, there's little funding from the federal government, but basically the only funding we get is from the state. Yeah.
Representative Detmer?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just final, what organization are responsible for these EL students to bring them into the community?
Superintendent Sesker?
That is, I think it's, I'm not sure. It would be something through the state of Minnesota that has that. We don't really have any control when they're put into our community. They're just part of our community, and we just accept them. You guys may know more, a little bit more about that than I do.
Representative Detmer?
And Mr. Chair, I would like to find out, you know, when students or population are brought into our communities, I'd like to know what organization, is it federal, is it a state organization, what brings them into our communities?
We can put that out to the ether and hope that someone comes back with a response. I do know some of it has to do with economics. Where are the jobs and people coming to find employment? Superintendent Sesker, perhaps overly speculative question, but following up on Representative Detmer's line of discussion, what if there were no immigration, if there was no immigration to Faribault, what would your school population be like, and what impact would that have on your budget?
Well, 25% of our students, we have 4,000 kids, so 1,000 students would not be in our system.
Okay, thank you. Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sesker, thanks for being here. I appreciate you coming down, and I know we've had many talks about a situation we have, not in our control, but we're trying to do the best with it. But I believe that the school has done really good work. We talked about the tablets. We talked about trying to change the time when they get tested. If they're non-English, delaying the actual test that they have to take during their school. But it's a really tricky situation. It's growing, and as far as I understand the funding, I did some research that a couple of years ago, and I believe when they're brought in federally, there's money that goes with each refugee. But my understanding from what I was reading was after the third move, so if they went to, if they started out in Chicago and then they moved someplace else and they moved to Faribault, that part of their funding stops. But we could definitely use some help in funding. We've got, you know, classrooms that are used for other purposes. It's not just the English, it's the whole culture. So to try to find a solution for that, it just takes time. And we've been working on a few things to try to give us a little more time before these kids are tested so the scores don't come out as low as they are. Because Superintendent Sesker addressed, is this hard to get families to Faribault when they look at the test scores on the website? I appreciate what you're doing. We've done a lot of good. We've got a long ways to go.
Superintendent Sesker.
Yeah, we do. I agree. We do a great job with those EL kids. We also had a perfect 36 on our ACT last year. So we've got some pretty sharp kids, too. We've got our robotics team won the state region championship, whatever they classify, the qualify for nationals. So we've got a variety of options for our kids. It's not just EL kids putting a little plug into Faribault, but we teach all kids. One thing I do want to point out, one of the reasons why we went to this program with our newcomer centers in each of the school buildings is we were finding out that teachers were spending an enormous time with our EL kids. And it just took a lot of time out. So we did a pull-out program for these kids who didn't speak English or haven't had any skills so those teachers could get around to all our other students and give them that equal opportunity of an education that they all deserve, not just our EL kids.
Superintendent, do you I'm trying to think of how to best formulate the question. Obviously, not all EL students are the same. Are you able to identify a student who is a SLIFE student who may have had the refugee camp experience that you referenced and the like, versus a student who is an immigrant but had continuous education in their home country or other countries. Is there a cost, since this is a finance committee, mm-hmm. is there a cost difference between a SLIFE student and an EL student who doesn't qualify under that definition? Can you help me with that, Superintendent?
Yeah, so for example, for our SLIFE kids, we had to open up three, we call them our newcomer centers, which required three teachers and also paras to go along with those teachers. We also have a variety of liaisons that speak both Somali and English. So there is a cost to it. The benefit, of course, is that we give those kids some really great educational opportunities at their pace until they can catch up with the rest of the kids. We use the WIDA scores, I don't remember what the acronym is, WIDA, to help assess whether or not those students are qualified to go back and mainstream into the classroom. And that's a really significant piece of our data that we use to determine what level those kids are, whether those SLIFE kids are or regular EL kids or regular classroom kids.
Thank you, Superintendent. Representative Kunesh-Podein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You asked about maybe some stories of immigrants or refugees, and if you'd like, I can give you a couple examples of in my teaching career of one day walking into my classroom, and here is a new student that I've never seen before, did not know he was going to arrive in my classroom. And this young man probably stood about 2 feet taller than me, and so he was probably older than the average kid in my class. And at the time, I was a library media specialist. We're teaching computer skills. You know, I sit down, turn on your computer, here's the lesson we're going to start. And this boy just sat there. And I had no idea. I had no history on him. I had no idea where he came from. And I'm like, turn on your computer. Come on, let's get going. Everybody else, chop, chop, you know. And he just looked up at me, and I said, have you never used a computer or what? And he said, no. And I was like, what is going on here? And this young man, his name is Obadiah, and I'll probably get really emotional because he is one of the most incredible young men I've ever met. His family came from Africa, and so this was in the mid-90s, and there had been the Civil War down there. He lived in a village with his family, his parents, his children, or his brothers and sisters, extended family, and the warring party came into their village and invaded their village, and so they all scattered into the bush, literally scattered into the bush. Obadiah was shot in the head and was just laying in the bush. And he said when he woke up, those white ladies were there to take care of him. So it was the Red Cross found him out in the bush. He had been shot in the head, and they took him into the hospital. They took care of him. His entire family had been slaughtered. Entire family slaughtered. So there's just Obadiah. And the reason or the way that he got to Minneapolis is that they found an aunt living here. She had, you know, already immigrated to the United States. So somehow or other they found this aunt and they brought Obadiah to the United States. So I think that was probably a fifth grade class that I was teaching, and Obadiah was probably 4 years older than him. Mm-hmm. And the language that he spoke was his tribal language, a little bit of English, and actually French. Mm-hmm. And the unique stories and experience that young boy brought to my classroom and brought to all of us was incredible. And the stories he would tell, I mean, everyone in my classroom would just become absolutely silent. And he would tell us stories about how he grew up, where he grew up, what it was like to be in that Civil War, what it was like to lose his entire family. And then all of a sudden, one day, be put on a plane, and 2 days later, he's sitting in my classroom, you know? And I can't tell you how much, like even now, how much that has enriched my life and everyone that he touched. And so I'm really proud of what you're doing in Faribault And I'm really proud of what Minnesota does when they reach out and opens their homes and their hearts and their purse strings to these folks that maybe they don't live right next door to us, and maybe they don't live in Wisconsin or North Dakota, South Dakota, anywhere, but that we're giving somebody an opportunity in life like this. And you can bet that he's giving back, you know, 100 times over what we've given to him.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Podein. Representative Katiza, what to?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have a twofold question. Mr. Sesker, I served as an ELL aide in a small rural school district in the state of Wisconsin for 1 year, right after I graduated from college. And the population that I served was mostly migrant workers who would come either from Texas or elsewhere in the United States. They would come up during the harvest season. Their children obviously were eligible to attend school while the family was living in the district, and then they would return home. I'm curious, is much of your population in the Faribault area migrant workers or children of migrant workers?
Superintendent Sesker.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we do have a group of migrant workers. It's not, I would say they're not as migrant as they had been in the past. We have a large population of Latino folks in our community. It's probably pretty close to third-generation Latino, though. So I would say that we do have an EL population that are migrant workers, but in Faribault, it's not. I wouldn't say it's not like Worthington or some of those other communities yet.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. And yes. Second part of my question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. How many languages, if you know exactly the number, are you working to serve in your district currently? And I guess I would ask the same question of Ms. Nicholson.
Thank you. Superintendent Sesker.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have 26 different languages in our small community of 4,000 students.
I imagine that's a challenge to find staff to work with those students. Thank you.
Representative Erickson, did you have a question?
thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to assure our superintendent that, you know, our ESSA plan includes 4-year graduation rate and 7-year, up to 7-year. So that's going to be a comfort to you, and we look forward to that data being reported because that'll be a positive for you.
That'd be good.
Superintendent?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Ms. Nicholson, thank you much. As I understand, you're a coordinator in the Osseo District of EL Services?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct.
Thank you very much. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Kirsten Nicholson, and I am the coordinator of the English Learner Program in the Osseo Area Schools. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I am here to express our support for the proposed House File 448 and describe its potential impact on students and practitioners in the Osseo Area Schools. We are the fifth largest district in Minnesota, serving more than 21,000 students in the Northwest metropolitan suburbs. 56% of our students are students of color, the third highest number of students of color in the state of Minnesota. Our students come from homes where more than 100 languages are spoken. And the English Learner Program in Osseo is the fifth largest in the state, serving more than 2,300 students. Students who qualify for EL program services make up 11% of our total student population. The range of students receiving EL program services varies significantly by school, however. At some schools, more than 40% of the students receive EL program services, and at others, that number is less than 5%. To ensure educational excellence and equity for each student, EL teachers work in collaboration with both general education and specialist teachers to design a comprehensive instructional program to meet the needs of each student. EL teachers provide English language development instruction for qualifying students in voluntary pre-kindergarten through 12th grade and collaborate with grade level teachers to provide access to content and support language development. In order to do this work, Osseo Area Schools currently spends more than 5 times the amount of state EL revenue we receive to support EL programming. In 2016, Osseo Area Schools received $1,548,100 in state EL revenue. Expenses to support our EL programming totaled $8,016,564. That resulted in a cross subsidy of negative $6,468,464, one of the highest in the state, and that pattern continues today. We have evidence that what we are currently doing has a positive impact. Students receiving EL program services in the Osseo Area Schools continue to outperform their peers across the state on English language proficiency assessments, on growth measures, and in the percentage of students graduating in 4 years. there is also evidence that critical work remains. These students are underperforming their peers on math and reading proficiency assessments. This indicates a need to expand differentiated programming, including native language and literacy programs, and professional development for all staff in order to meet the needs and leverage the assets of our multilingual learners across their entire instructional day. The proposed legislation will support and advance the work that we are doing in Osseo Area Schools to accelerate achievement for students receiving EL program services, to meet the world's best workforce goals, and to implement provisions in the LEAPS Act. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your kind attention and for your service. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Nicholson. Questions? Representative Pryor.
Thank you. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Chair. How long did it take to get to where you are right now in terms of the number of English language learners? When we started out with the demographics of immigration and speaking other languages. So was there a time when it was not the same concentration I guess you're ready to answer. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Ms. Nicholson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that is true. So I started working in the district in 2000 as a teacher at one of the junior high at the time. Now we have middle schools. And that is actually was in response to a rapidly increasing population of students who would qualify to receive EL program services. So in the Osseo Area Schools, it was that around that 1998-2000 era when we began to see a very significant increase in the number of students who would require some additional support to learn English and to achieve in content areas. That growth continues. Actually, for a while in the Osseo Area Schools, our overall student population wasn't growing much, but our population of students receiving EL program services continued to grow, and that continues to this day. And we typically serve 100 or so more students every year who qualify to receive those services.
Representative Pryor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Pryor, Superintendent Sesker indicated, and sir, correct me if I'm wrong, that Faribault relies on a levy that you've passed to cover the shortfall in EL funding. Does Osseo also have an excess levy referendum that they rely on?
Yeah, so in Osseo, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, thank you. In the Osseo Area Schools, the majority of the funding, it comes from our general education funds, and so that would include revenue coming from the state, as well as we have operating and technology levies that voters have approved in our school district.
Thank you. Superintendent, did I characterize your earlier testimony correctly?
You did. We just, not all of the levy is towards the EL program. We used a portion of that levy to hire our EL coordinator.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions for either Superintendent Sesker or Ms. Nicholson? Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment about the Faribault Falcons. I'm very proud to say that I graduated from Faribault, but I don't know if the committee knows that Faribault is also the home of the only Heisman Trophy winner for the University of Minnesota. Bruce Smith was a Heisman Trophy winner in the late 40s. And also Treasure K Blue Cheese. If you like blue cheese, mm-hmm. There's a factory there that I worked in during my college years. And also the Woolen Mills, some great blankets there, and Bernie's restaurant right on the main street. My dad, who's 95, visits that probably twice a week.
Wow.
And it's a great downtown area. The downtown area has been renovated. It's a beautiful downtown area.
Yeah.
So thank you for coming in today.
You bet. Thank you.
Representative Detmer, how does the pie there compare to the pie up at Betty's on the North Shore, since we've run into each other there?
That's right. The pie there, the breakfasts are outstanding.
All right.
At Bernie's restaurant.
Okay. Okay. We'll keep it in mind. Superintendent, Ms. Nicholson, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Herr. Yep. Well, you can come on up, Mr. Strom. There's two spreadsheets in our packet that speak to the issues of EL learning. Can you assist the committee in understanding these better?
Mr. Chair, please. Members, well, the next testifiers are coming up. There's two printouts in your packet. The first, oriented portrait style, shows the total pupil count in each district for fiscal year 10. The number of English learners measured as the average daily membership, so essentially assuming that adding them to a full-time status, essentially, in the second column, and then the percent for that year. So if you're looking at the totals line, you can see that in 2010, 5.3% was the state average English learners compared to total pupils. The same columns are repeated for fiscal year 20, and then the last two columns show that change, the 48.7% change over that 11-year period. So, Mr. Chair, the first printout is just the pupil counts for those two sets of years. The second printout, oriented landscape style, is the estimated English learner revenue for fiscal year 20. And there's two parts to the revenue calculation. There's a basic revenue of $704 per pupil and a concentration revenue of $250 per pupil under current law. And you can see those in the third and fourth columns of data there, and the total baseline English learner revenue of $59.1 million in the next column. And then dividing that by the total pupils served, not by the EL pupils, but the total pupils served, you can see the extra amount of funding that's provided for English learner services. The next columns do the same thing, but using the criteria established in Representative Herr's bill, House File 448. And you can see there that the minimum count in our formula, which if you look up and down the list, you can see is 20 under current laws, raised to 25. And then you can see the basic revenue going from $704 to $1,400, raises $90 million instead of $46 million. And the concentration revenue going from $250 to $1,000 raises $52 million compared to $13 million. So you can see in the second-to-last column the revenue under the proposal, and then in the last column the increase in revenue on a pupil basis. So, Mr. Chair, very quickly, those are the mm-hmm. two printouts in your packet, and I believe we also have a printout that the department prepared on the cross-subsidy if members would like to see that. So.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Strom.
Do we have the cross-subsidy?
Treats. There are treats. Representative Herr, welcome to the committee. Thank you for the treats. Representative Katiza Witun, would you move that House File 448, do I have that right? I do. Be before the committee for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
Yes, I would like to move that House File 448 be moved for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Herr, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Dagny and members. My name is Kalee Herr. I'm representative. Before I start my testimony today and talking about House File 440, I just wanted to say that I brought nothing but the best for all of you. This is from Willett's Bakery. I don't know how many people are familiar with St. Paul, but that's the go-to place for pastries and deliciousness. So enjoy. So thank you for moving House File 448 for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Omnibus Bill. I appreciate the opportunity to tell you more about this bill and why it is critical for the future of education for our state. To start, what this bill seeks to do is increase ELL funding from $704 to $1,400 per student per year, with an increase in multipliers for schools with high EL concentrations from $250 to $1,000 per student. That would increase total funding for EL from $59 million to $142 million. This is a large increase, but a necessary one. In the Minnesota Department of Education English Learner Education Fall 2018 report, MDE reported that there were over 73,000 students enrolled in English learner status, enrolled with English learner status. In the previous year, it was 71,919. The EL population is growing faster than the rate of total enrollment. In St. Paul Schools, which is my district, there are 11,000 EL students that speak 129 languages and dialects. That means that one in every three students is an EL student. To put this in perspective, if St. Paul's EL students were its own district, it would be the eighth largest school district in the state. The primary responsibility in meeting the needs of EL lies with local education and agencies. In over 15 years, the per pupil amount of $700 has not changed. Last year, over 40% of school districts across the state had a shortfall in their funding for EL, a total of over $104 million. To make up the difference between revenues coming in and actual cost of EL, school districts use their general funds to fill this gap. This is not just an issue impacting urban school districts, but districts across the state. When looking at how EL funds are distributed between urban, suburban, rural, and charters, Minneapolis and St. Paul would receive about 25% of the funds. The rest is split between the suburbs and greater Minnesota. Lack of funding for this growing population has led to high student-teacher ratios, outdated curriculum, insufficient professional development for our educators, inadequate family support, and the inability to develop programs that have been proven to work. We can talk about the data and the story that it tells, but I think it's important to see how the data lives and breathes in the everyday lives of administrators, teachers, parents, educators. I'd like to bring those up here today to testify. The first is Bee Vang, principal of Mississippi Creative Arts School, which is in the St. Paul Public School District. With the chair's permission, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Vang.
Ms. Vang, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. It's an honor for me to be here and provide a little bit of my own experience and to shed some light for you guys. My name is Bee Vang. I'm the principal at Mississippi Creative Arts School in St. Paul. When we talk about education finance, typically we reference adequate and sufficient funds, right? That's how we talk about providing funds for school. Most likely, we are thinking in terms of numbers of students, enrollment. Rarely do we think about the needs of our students, which doesn't always translate into equitable funds. We have sufficient and adequate, but it's not equitable. Therefore, that consistently makes funding insufficient to support the needs, the learning needs of our students, and particularly when we're talking ELs, we're talking about students who already come from a marginalized population. Out of necessity, many districts and myself as an administrator also default to a funding practice that I call the ORs, right? We either fund this or we fund this. And we also practice taking from Paul to pay for Peter. Therefore, we always have to constantly keep up with the funding gaps that we have, whether it's in our district or in our school. Currently, at my school, I have 5 EL teachers servicing approximately 300 students, ranging from levels 1 to levels 5. And that is the ratio of 1 to 6. When we take a look at that service and we break it down into what they get per day, we have students ranging from receiving services once a week to 2 times to 3 times a week or on a daily basis for a maximum of 25 minutes. If we take a look at our highest needs group, those are our students in our lowest EL levels according to Access. That's about 2 hours of services a week. And it's not even consistent. When you think about that, if it was your child receiving 2 hours of specific language instruction a week, there's a lot of injustices in that system of servicing students. In addition, I also have 2 full-time bilingual EAs and 2 half-time bilingual EAs. When I think about the services that goes out towards my students and my families from these bilingual EAs, we know that we want to maximize their time in the classroom. We want them to make sure that they provide academic support to our student. But in doing so, we sacrifice their support to our families. I don't know about you guys, but on a daily basis, I have to tell my bilingual families, I'm sorry, I can't help you today because I don't speak Spanish. You will have to come back tomorrow. Okay? That doesn't happen to any one of our English-speaking families. So, you know, as I conclude here, I want to just say that we all want to do better for all of our students. And districts and buildings should not be able to should not be the only ones to carry the burden of closing this funding gap or these shortfalls that happen in our building. Okay? So the bill is very critical. Number one, it will address the EL funding gap, not only across the district and maybe across the state, but especially at schools like mine. It will also address the service gap at schools to both students and families so that students and families can get what they need in order to achieve at the language proficiency rate of acquiring English language within that 5 to 7 year allowance time or that time frame, and or within the 7 year funding time. Because when we don't have adequate services or equitable services, then our students are stuck in ELL services for their lifetime while they attend a school in St. Paul. So I want to say it again that I appreciate this opportunity, Mr. Chairman, representatives, to be able to come before you and share a little bit of my experience. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vang. Representative Hur, you have other testifiers?
I do. Our next person who will be testifying is Meichi Vu, who is a director at one of the charter schools here in St. Paul.
Ms. Vu, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Meichi Vu. I'm the executive director and founder of Hope Community Academy, a public charter school on the east side of St. Paul. We currently serve students in kindergarten through eighth grade. We opened in the fall of 2000, so we are into our 18th year, and our primary focus is on the Hmong language and culture. Knowing our students is very important to our staff because most of our students are not English learners. About 95% of our students are Asian or EL learners as well, too. Majority of the Asian population that we service are Hmong-speaking and Karen families, who are most recently new immigrants to our school as well as to our community here. As in general, charter schools have a higher rate of immigrant students, and as I stated earlier, Hope is one of those. We, like I said, 95% of our students are Hmong. And what we've been doing the last few years, I know that Principal Vang just talked about funding and what St. Paul schools have been doing. Well, I think that many of our public schools are doing the same thing, too. What we have focused at Hope is really looking at our EL data, knowing that most of our students are from that background. And how do we service them better? The funding goes into staffing, and unfortunately, we don't have enough EL teachers in our building for the 500 students that we currently serve. We also have title teachers and, of course, our bilingual paraprofessionals. What we have done the last few years is what we call the hub instructional model. And in that, each grade level focuses on the core teachers and then having at least one EL teacher and a title teacher and, of course, at least two bilingual paraprofessionals, one being Hmong-speaking and one is Karen-speaking because of our high population, those two languages. Again, due to the lack of funding, each grade level does not have the adequate teaching or teachers and support staff to help each student. But our third grade team, this past year and this current year, we've really focused on that, having that core team member. And we have seen that our students have made a lot of progress. I have a couple of students. There are many, many students at our school, but I have a couple of students I want to share with you today. Most these are two Korean students who are most recent immigrants to the U.S., and into our school. We have a student, a male student. He started Hope in kindergarten, who is currently a third grader. And I'm losing his excess score. Overall, in kindergarten, he came in at an overall composite of 1.9. In first grade, he moved up to 3.6. And last year, he went down slightly to 3.4. But if you break down his into all the other domain areas, there is some gradual growth being made. The scores, again, reflects what we're doing at Hope to show that, you know, with the team coming together and supporting each other and sharing the student's load, that this can impact the student's learning. We are using the data, definitely, to make sure that our instruction fits the student's results as well, too. The second student I want to focus on is a female, again, student who came in at the end of first grade in April. And overall composite was at 1 in first grade, but then in second grade, she moved up to a 2.6. Now, her MAP scores in last school year, the 17-18 school year, was 153 to 169. This year, the A reading scores, because we've switched assessments, in the fall, she started at 450, and currently she's at 463. That's a 13-point growth there. Her reading level at the beginning of the school year this year was a level EF. Currently, she is at a level J. So, again, we know that when we integrate core teachers with our EL and our title, and I neglected to include our special education teachers, and our bilingual paraprofessionals, when they work as a team, we know that in the short amount of time that these kids have been with us, there's definitely a big impact in their academic learning. And because of the funding, we're not able to support every single grade level with this kind of a team approach. And so there's definitely the staff development training that it's ongoing. And today, for example, we're moving into our fourth grade team and our fifth grade team doing the same thing that the third grade team has been doing this past year and this year to show that there is growth there. So I just want to say that we are going to continue this with this hub instructional model implementation at my school. But we are also really requesting that the funding increases because it does make a difference with what we are seeing the last couple of years that we've done this. And so I want to thank you all for allowing me to speak for a few minutes this morning with you.
Thank you, Ms. Vu. Representative Herr, you have additional testifiers?
I do. The next person that will be speaking is Omar Saeed, and he is a parent of ELL students.
Mr. Saeed, welcome to the committee. Thank you for coming in today. Please introduce yourself to our Please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. My name is Omar Saeed, and I'm a parent of two children attending in St. Paul's School, and I'm also a business owner. I'm a member of Somali community with a representative of one of the top five languages spoken by English language in Minnesota, and by largest Spanish is 37.6%, larger than Minnesota, larger than Somali, 17.2, followed by Hmong and Vietnamese and Korean. And because of this, a wholeheartedly support and increased funding for the English Learner Program, children from the immigrant and refugees family are diverse. Some arrive highly educated. Where some have come from little to no formal education. This is why we need to prepare our educator and educational institution to provide the best educator to students of all background, including English learner. To do this, we must ensure that English schools have a significant funding to train EL teachers, educator assistants, and other staff to create a program that will help EL students succeed. I support this increased funding because I knew this will benefit Somali children since we are a growing community. I hope by making the English Learner Program better that this will also mean the decrease in numbers of the years that the students are in EL so that they can exit the program sooner. I also know that there are many students in smaller city and schools district in Greater Minnesota who need English learners program. This new law could help those districts too. I was English learner students many years ago. It was helpful to me, but I also know that program could use some improvement. Today, many U.S.-born Somali students are in EL. We need to create an EL program that also met their needs, which are they very difficult for new arrival. I hope you see how complex this issue is and support this effort. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saeed. Representative Herr, you have two individuals who've traveled from Waseca. Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, Superintendent Tom Lee, if you're here, if you're ready for your testimony.
Please, sir, please come down. And is there a Ms. Salinas with you as well? Oh, and Mr. Delgado, I'm sorry. Superintendent Lee, welcome to the committee. When you're prepared, please introduce yourself for the tape and continue with your testimony.
Chair Dabney and representatives, thank you for the opportunity to be here, and thank you for putting us last. The roads from Waseca were a little slow going today.
I can imagine.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to address this issue and specifically this bill. My name is Tom Lee. I am the superintendent of Waseca Public Schools in Waseca, Minnesota. Waseca has over 1,900 students, 38% who are receive free and reduced lunch, 16% students of color, including 13% of our students who are Latino. We have 90 EL students who are mostly Latino, but whose primary language may also be Somali, Chinese, or another language. 17% of our 1,900 students receive special education services. We have 3 full-time EL teachers, 4 dedicated EL paraprofessionals, a cultural liaison, and we use interpreters for families in our EL programs. By the way, we have also had extreme difficulty finding qualified licensed staff. It's very difficult to find these kinds of licenses and these kinds of people. I'm envious of those who say they have bilingual paraprofessionals. And so that's just a point I wanted to make. Through the years, we have had several students who have gone through our EL programs very successfully and become academically proficient in English. Because of the Bird's Eye packing plant in Waseca, we also have a large number of migrant seasonal workers who arrive in the spring and leave in the fall after the pea and corn pack is completed. Their children attend our schools and are often not reflected in our numbers. We receive a little over $26,000 in EL funding, and our expenses are a little over $300,000. As with special education, the difference in expenses is covered by our general fund. I urge you to support this bill and others like it to provide more adequate funding for our schools. Today I have brought with me Mr. J.D. Delgado, who is our cultural liaison and, frankly, Mr. Everything when it comes to services for EL students in Waseca. J.D. often interprets conferences. He interprets district communications. He works with students supporting their academics. And as well, as you can see today, he fulfills the role of other duties as assigned. By testifying this morning. He has brought with him one of our senior students, of whom we are very pleased and proud, Cassandra Salinas, and she is here to tell her story. So I'd like to turn it over to them, please.
Mr. Everything or Ms. Salinas?
Ms. Salinas.
Ms. Salinas, please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, well. Good morning, everyone. My name is Cassandra Salinas from Waseca, Minnesota. I'm a senior at Waseca High School. I have spent some time each year in Waseca school district since I was in kindergarten as a migrant student. In 2013, I was in sixth grade when we decided to make Minnesota our home, and we've been here ever since. The school in Waseca has always made me feel welcome. I have benefited from their ELL program since I started kindergarten here. When I was in elementary school, I remember being pulled from home to spend some time, extra help with English and math skills. About the time I started junior high and high school, we chose to stay in Waseca and make it our home. School became more difficult. It was then that I really appreciated the ELL program and how it supported me. Again, I was given extra classes. English classes to help teach me and use English correctly, learn more vocabulary words, and to write papers for my classes. I have also been offered small EL study halls where I receive extra help with my homework. I appreciate that they have kept a close eye on my campus portal to help me keep all my work and grades. My family has needed to go back to Texas periodically, and I was gotten extra help getting caught up my homework and through the EL program. The ELL program has given me extra boost and confidence I needed to succeed. In fact, I made the honor roll right here.
Congratulations.
Thank you. The program has given me not only educational hope, but a warm and friendly environment that has helped me get over my anxieties and personal problems at home. I always feel like the ELL room is my home away from home and family. I hope this has informed how much the ELL programs have benefited me and so many students over the years in Waseca. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Salinas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Delgado.
My name is J.D. Delgado. Actually, my name is Genaro Delgado.
I make it easier for everyone to call me JD. I am a immigrant from Mexico. We immigrated about 27 years ago, and we made Huasica our home. I am currently the cultural liaison for Huasica. We're here today to request more funding for our ELL program. I am not prepared for a speech or anything, but what I can give you today is that if you can see Cassandra over here, she is the work of all of these ELL support teachers, staff members, that we work very hard to try and to ensure that she succeed in life. Every day we talk to her about college and how she can make a change in her life and within our communities. Because we kind of request funding, but what I wanna do with this kid's life is not only give them the classes, but ensure that they achieve college, achieve a different dream, make everything accessible for them. If we have professional ELL teachers, it will make a big difference. So funding, it's very important, again, because thanks to the money that is allocated to our programs, I am here today, and we support kids like Cassandra, people from Somalia, people that has difficulties in their life. We were talking about refugee kids that were chasing away and they were being killed. So they show in our program, and we need to have these professionals, these people that cares enough about the ELL program and making a difference in kids' life. That's all I have. So,
thank you, Mr. Delgado. This is a public hearing. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify either for or against House File 448? Seeing none, we'll close the public portion. We'll close the public portion of the testimony. Questions for the from the committee. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually have a question for the bill author. But I first want to thank all of the testifiers for coming here. And this has been very enlightening. So thank you very much. And Representative Herr, I'd like to thank you for highlighting this issue. It's a very important issue, and thank you for your bill, too. My question for you is a little bit bigger picture question. As a committee, we will end up having to make very difficult decisions on funding because obviously we're not going to have endless funds. We know that. Wish money grew on trees, but it doesn't. Mm-hmm. So my question is, we've seen we've got the special ed subsidy, which is, I believe, maybe at least $500 million to be able to close that. We've got this big ELL cross-subsidy issue, too. I should say special ed cross-subsidy as well. And then, of course, other programming needs, including the general fund. And I'm just wondering how you would see prioritizing these things, which would is difficult, but, you know, the special ed cross-subsidy, the ELL cross-subsidy, the general fund among the three. Do you have any thoughts on that as to priorities?
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. I'm going to bring back the two principals to maybe sit here with me because the truth is that I think that any funding, there are a lot of priorities, right? We always look at our children from a holistic approach in that our children are very complex beings. They need special ed services. They need ELL services. They need mental health services. There are so many things that we really need to do in order to ensure that our children are in an environment that they can learn. So I feel for the struggle that you will all have to go through in order to figure out how to do this. What I can say is that any funding increase, I know that this is a big ask, but any funding increase will help the ELL program because this is an issue that impacts the entire state. I would say that the principals and what I've learned from working in St. Paul Public School District is that they know their students and their schools better than anybody else does, and that being able to get additional funding, they will know where to use those fundings to be able to fill the gap for what they need. There are already proven programs and tools and resources that we know work to support ELL students, and that any additional funding will actually help them in this. And I don't know if that answers your question, but maybe if the principals might have some thoughts around, like, amount of funding and how that could be used.
And so Ms. Vu or Ms. Vang, brief answers, please. Do you want more money?
Of course.
That was a brief answer.
My Chivu again. As I stated earlier, with our hub instructional model, we are, again, knowing that there's a lack of funding, especially for charter schools, we have to be very innovative. And so with this hub instructional model, we are bringing together special education, EL, Title, Gen Ed. We're bringing it together so that they're all sharing the load of servicing our kids. And that is what's making the impact and what we're seeing the results. And so with the funding for us, that's how we see it working.
Ms. Vang?
I also want to add that many of our EL students are also our special ed students. So there's, of course, definitely some cross-servicing happening right there. And so no matter where it goes, it is going to hit one of these areas. In addition to, of course, if we have ELs, if our EL services, if students are provided EL services through the EL teacher, and we have that readily available to our students, then of course our gen ed students are also going to get more time with the general ed teacher. So everybody is going to win in the end.
Thank you very much. Representative Bennett, any further? Thank you very much. Representative Herr, any closing comments?
Yes, just a quick closing comment. So in closing, I want to acknowledge that this bill will more than double the funds for ELL. It's what we're asking for. It's a big ask. It's probably not going to happen, but any funds would be helpful in order to close this gap. Please keep in mind that this is not only an investment in our EL students, but also an investment in the future of our state. Data from our state demographer indicates that we will have a worker shortage in the not-so-distant future, and that one way to fill this gap is to continue our state's rich tradition of welcoming immigrants and refugees. What we know is that ELs who have not fully mastered English by high school have only about 40% chance of completing high school and acquiring a diploma. And our EL students, if our EL students are not equipped with the language skills and thus education they need, they will not be able to contribute to Minnesota the way immigrants who came before them have. Lastly, I would be remiss if I did not mention that I, too, was an EL student. As a refugee from Laos, English was not my first language. I remember distinctly when the characters in my dreams switched from speaking Hmong to English. I was in middle school, and as a preteen, I thought it odd and didn't know what it meant. What I know now is that that was the moment when English was solidified in my cognition. That was the moment in which I was no longer learning the technical aspect of language, but experiencing it. That was the moment that anything that I dreamed of, that I could be. So thank you for giving our educators, partners, and families time to testify today. We urge the committee to include House File 448 for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Herr. With that, Representative Katiza Watoon renews her motion that House File 448 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future division omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all, particularly to the testifiers who traveled distance to be here today. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you.